Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome along to what is, I think, the third of these lockdown sessions. Ruthie.
Dad.
Welcome. It's good to get confirmation of what we were saying on the podcast last week.
It's not much of an intro. It's very quick.
Let's get
straight in, isn't it?
Well, let's get into it. Let's get into it.
We should make this as long as possible, you know?
Because we've got plenty.
We've got all the time in the world.
We do have all the time in the world, as Louis Armstrong said all those years ago.
Nothing but time.
Nothing but time, you're
right.
Is
that another song?
I'm sure it is. However, it's nice to have confirmation of what we said last week in the podcast. In this morning's Times, Alice Thompson says...
What did we say?
What we were saying last week, what did we say? You should know, you were there.
I have absolutely zero recollection of what we said. I could not tell you one thing I said. I could do the exact same word-for-word podcast this week and I wouldn't have no idea.
You wouldn't have no idea what's happening in the English language. Last week, we said that there's been all sorts of talk about schools and schools going back and how that's going to be managed, etc., etc. But there's been absolutely no talk whatsoever about students. And Boris Johnson has been laying out his roadmap. And I thought, is it just me that's noticing the absence of anything about students?
A lot of people have been saying that now, haven't they? Saying universities have just been left to absolutely...
Totally.
There's no information.
Well, Alice Thompson says in her column in the Times
not
this
even
morning,
a little mention in the...
She says, school children, workers, the elderly and the vulnerable have all been told what to expect in the coming months, however vague the timetable. Students, however, have been ignored. For the past 6 weeks, despite being among the least likely to show symptoms if they're infected by COVID-19, most undergraduates have dutifully returned to isolate...
We're very dutiful, that's what we are.
Have dutifully returned to isolate at their parents' homes, and we know what hell that is.
Does she actually say that?
No, she doesn't. I said that. Rather than parted with friends. Now they are in danger of being treated shoddily and kept grounded while many around them are set free.
Yeah, I think that. Send us back. Why are you sending school kids back?
The government's roadmap for relaxing lockdown, published on Monday this week, doesn't mention the fate of our 2.5 million students, so they're still in limbo. Not only are they unable to go backpacking abroad this summer, take up internships or go to festivals, they still have no idea when they can return to their lecture halls and labs. And that's quite apart from the fact that you've got to be charged full price for online courses, which...
I don't
as
think
we
they
said,
will
don't
be fully online, though.
No, well, whatever they...
Manchester, I can't remember whether it's Man Met or Uni of, because I can't remember where my friend goes. They're saying that it's online lectures, but socially distanced seminars. Mm. So seminars will be in person, lectures will be online. But I think it's also just... Doesn't that seem really early to be telling them what it'll be like for October?
Well, I think they're probably going to make plans quite well in advance, I would have thought.
But I suppose like an online lecture is this... Like, you don't have to plan anything more for an online lecture versus a normal one, because all the lectures are online anyway. All lectures are recorded anyway. So the only difference is just the students won't be there. So I don't see how it takes any more planning.
Do you want more bad news?
I don't think I can take it anymore.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's from California, so it might not come here for a while. Death bots. Do you want to hear about death bots?
I mean, they don't sound brilliant.
Well, I tell you, some people think they are brilliant. But basically, one company in California says it's close to...
Why are you saying California like that?
Like what?
California.
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 California, I'm saying...
No, you said it normally.
I'm saying it normally.
No, before you said California.
California. I've never said California in my life.
Okay, well, listen back.
I will listen back. I'm stressing that it is... I mean, maybe California. I'm stressing that it's California, that it's not in
You
the
were
UK.
Saying, like, California?
Yeah, precisely, California.
No, California. When you listen back, you'll think this is really funny.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a 10-minute podcast on the pronunciation of the word California.
Then you said it normal.
Well, I do say it normally. That's
before
nonsense.
You didn't. Before it's... you did, like, every letter, like the N-I-A, but you said, like, every
California
letter.
I-A. It's a song. Well, I didn't see that, but anyway, I will listen back to it. But we've now entered a sort of Kanye situation.
Neither of us, right? Go on.
Well, go what's on. How do we pronounce Kanye?
Kanye. Yeah, that was fine. Okay, yeah. Come on. What's happening in California?
I'll tell you what's happening in California. There's a company out there that's producing death bots. Now, these death bots are like Alexa, that sort of those digital assistant type things. It'll use voice recordings made before clients die in order to create bots, which will be accessed via phones or smart speakers. They can, now this is dead people, right? So before I die, I would record a whole load of stuff, different words, different sentences and all that. And it means that after death, I'll still be able to talk and reminisce. And
oh, it's terrifying. There's an episode of Black Mirror that is literally that. And
is it?
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, the episode's awful. Like, it's awful. It's called Wish You Were Here or While You Were Here or something like that. So give that a watch if you fancy it.
Are they still there, Black Mirror? Are they on...
Yeah, they're on Netflix.
They're on Netflix.
The last season of them wasn't very good. And Charlie Brooker said, we're not doing another one because the world's just too bleak.
We've got a point, we're in Black Mirror territory.
Anyway, we're living it, don't need to do TV shows.
We do indeed. So what I'm saying is, after I'm dead...
Yeah, there's already enough recordings of your voice to make something.
Yes, they could, that's right. But
I'll tell you what, I won't. Be good riddance.
Well, I was thinking that, you see. Because I'd also be able to apparently reminisce, so I could, you know, it's about the early days of the Beatles and all those things I like to reminisce about. And I'll be able to crack a favourite joke, so you won't be deprived.
Oh my God, this sounds like a nightmare. But nightmare within a nightmare.
Yes, but as a dead person, I would get... Because this is accessed on your iPhone. If you sort of unfollow me or something after I'm dead, that would be the ultimate indignity. Assuming there is an afterlife, but I think we've decided that probably...
I don't think there is. Balance of probabilities.
Yeah.
I mean, no, some people just believe it, don't you? It's not about thinking what... You know, it's just about faith or blind ignorance.
As well as the fact that you're
being... death bots. Oh, I don't like the world we live in. I'm having a bad day.
Well, it's taken me about 4.5 hours to persuade you to come up here and do this recording.
It's 3 o'clock.
It's 3 o'clock. We're going to start about 10 o'clock this morning. It's going to be. Do you want more bad news?
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is the third piece of bad news. That's fine, because I always say good things come in threes, and so do bad things. And you get three. If you get three bad things, you'll get three good things. So,
I'm not guaranteeing. this is your bad thing, though. People like yourself, aged between 18 and 29, are in the least physical danger from coronavirus. So you don't need to worry about that at all. But your mental health and finances are suffering most, according to researchers at University College in London. They say that, to be honest, you're in very little physical danger, you're in a lot of mental danger, therefore...
Why are we in more mental danger than, say, like the sort of 30 to 40 age bracket, or the kind of 13 to 19?
It's an interesting split. The 30 to 40, this is the 30 to 40 age group, the millennials, in other words, are the most compliant when it comes to what's recommended, you know, the social distancing, this thing, as we've seen by your brother and your elder sisters.
I'm no less compliant. Like, I think that university students have been overall quite
I think university students. I think probably with universities, it's a class thing. Apparently,
it's massive. I think that's more the issue is less age split. It's completely class. Yeah. I think that, and like I think Boris Johnson's speech on
Monday.
God, all well, the days Sunday night, one, then
Monday in Parliament, Sunday address to the nation.
Yeah, in his address to the nation, the when he laid out the plans, I think more and more you realise that it is just class issues, like they're just highlighting it so clearly. Like basically, he was saying working class people will need to go back to work, middle class white collar job people can go and work in their conservatories quite happily, and. I do think, I think more than age, I think class is where you're going to see the real divide.
In fairness to Boris Johnson, it is the case that if you work on construction sites or you're a bus driver or one of those jobs, sort of traditional working class jobs, A, they're more necessary, but B, they're harder to do from home. You can't be a bus driver from home,
whereas
you can be an accountant from home.
Yeah, no, I think that is absolutely true. But I think it kind of has shown the divides in jobs and living conditions and stuff.
Well, it has, but it's always going to. I don't think that. I don't think it's exacerbated it in any way. I just think it's pointed it up that we have a class system. We've got a very definite, and always have had, between white collar and blue collar, more or less the same as they have in America as well. You have this class.
I think there has. It's shown that there are class divides that. So I've done a lot of reading about France and Spain because I read a lot of articles in their newspapers. If I'm doing like bits of work and stuff. Read a lot about that.
Like bits of work,
occasionally. No, but I have been. And one of the things, there are nowhere near as big a class divides in those countries as we have here. Like, there's so many articles in our newspapers that are about sort of a class divide of like working class jobs versus middle class jobs, like what it will say for people who live here versus here and blah blah blah. Whereas in those newspapers, there's nowhere near the obsession of class. And I don't know whether that's just because it doesn't exist as badly there.
I think it exists.
A bigger class divide or a bigger class problem in this country. And I think hopefully one of the positives, I'm having a bad day.
So. You're a little bit negative, aren't you?
Negative Nelly. But if there are, hopefully there will be like positives at the other side of this. And one hopefully is that we're going to kind of value traditional working class jobs more.
Yeah, although arguably, you look at it in those very, very stark terms,
and you're quite right.
But say you're a bus driver and you're working for London Transport, and I feel particularly for people who work, especially in London Transport, because I think we have agreed this is a London thing rather than a national thing. So if you work for London Transport, coronavirus.
It's still felt regionally, especially in the north.
Yes, it's felt regionally because we have to follow the same rules. But what I'm saying is 30 London bus drivers, not in any particular age group, not in any particular underlying health group, 30 London bus drivers have died.
Really?
30 London bus drivers have died during this coronavirus thing. But let's take the example of a London bus driver. If he would be working for London Transport for, say, 20 years, contributing into a pension, they would take it out of him. And at the end of the day, he gets his pension when he's finished driving London buses at 60 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
He gets his pension. He's had to go to work. The financial advisor who will be looking at the pension funds, who's able to work from home, and he's trying to invest in trying to look around the world, the whole world, and deal with the oil price crash and all that sort of stuff, and trying to decide where best to move all these funds that all the London bus drivers and the tube drivers and everybody who works on London Transport have been contributing from the wages every week. His job, in a way, I know you can make a class point about it, but it's just as important, more important really, than a bus driver.
I don't think you can say more important. I think
no, it's just as important as a bus driver.
But
because otherwise the bus driver will retire and have no money.
Yeah, but I agree. But I think there are also a hell of a lot of jobs which are overpaid and not as important as essential jobs, so these cleaning porters and hospitals, like not even speaking about nurses because they're definitely underpaid. There are they are just, I'm not saying that this financial advisor job that you've highlighted is not important. It is, and we live in a capitalist system.
That's the problem.
I'm not at all an advocate for communism. Like it's been proven time and time again that it doesn't work. But I think we can all agree, and I think that this crisis has highlighted that people are underpaid.
People are underpaid. Yeah,
these traditional blue collar working class jobs are underpaid. Yeah. Whether I'm not saying that everyone's ever going to make the exact same amount of money. I don't think.
Well, that is the problem, isn't it?
But they are underpaid. They can. I think there's definitely something we can do, especially in London as well. I just think surely you can pay people a bit more without saying goodbye to a capitalist system. You can make things a little bit more equal and improve living conditions in London.
I think that's, you know, all the parties on the left, that's what they sort of aim, you know, the sort of moderate parties on the left, that's what they aim for. And I'm sure Keir Starmer will try, as Tony Blair did, to make society a little more fair.
But I think that's turned into, like, recently, I mean, I know, like, Jeremy Corbyn is not, you didn't like him, and I wasn't particularly like a Corbynite, but it seemed like he was kind of saying stuff like that, but that's not particularly radical to say, but I do think that's become quite a radical standpoint of, like, evening people up, whereas that's always kind of just been a Labour...
Yes, I think Corbyn. I think your problem there is your Corbyn problem. I don't think Keir Starmer differs that much politically from Corbyn.
Yeah.
I suspect Tony Blair didn't differ that much. It's just that Corbyn was just such a snake in the grass in terms of his history in the Labour Party, you know, backstabbing other people.
I think Labour does need to be more left. Like, I think that is true of Jeremy Corbyn, is that at least he pushed Labour a bit more left.
Let's give you some good news now, Ruth. Oh, would you like some good news?
Love some good news.
Well, it was a headline in the papers. Employers prefer arts graduates to scientists.
I'd seen this headline. I've not read the article, though.
Well, the article basically says just that employers prefer arts graduates to scientists, which was interesting coming on top of the fact that the government had said that these STEM people, which you've told me about in the past, science, technology, engineering, maths, these STEM people were going to be allowed to go back. Whereas art students were going to be able to had to live through the living hell that was being was being with their parents all the time.
I mean, it's not, but like there have been quite a few university students on the York forum things and stuff like that who have said it's annoying to see students just complaining a lot, or like complaint articles kind of covered in the newspapers that are kind of just like, oh, what a shame they're not being able to party anymore and they're having to go home to mum and dad and whatever. But a lot of students have come out and said, like, actually, my living environment is awful and it's, like, it's a really damaging place to be. And I've gone home because that's the safe thing to do, but please can we work towards getting me back to somewhere? Like, not everyone's... I'm still finding it, like, a little bit hard moving home and I have all the privileges in the world. Like, there are... I think it's important to remember there are university students who have moved home and will be in horrible environments.
Yeah. Well, we know that.
And unsafe as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Although Giles Curran, who was an arts graduate, did write something in the Times that was very amusing, which you might enjoy. He said they're probably only letting the scientists back in first because they have to use laboratories, whereas arts students can do their... quotes, work. Art students can do their work lying in the park smoking a spliff until a copper comes along and tells them to smoke that spliff while they're walking about. But employers prefer arts graduates, so there you are.
I can't remember, I might have actually mentioned this. I had a meeting thing for a playwriting thing I was doing in, God, it feels like years and years ago, but it was this year. And we were talking about sort of what are the big problems and stuff that are facing us. And I was talking about, like, the world I graduate into, like, what will that look like in terms of jobs and what will be necessary, what will they have found computers to do and stuff. And she was telling me about how she was talking to her friend who was an accountant, and he was saying, like, my job is still really necessary now. You know, that's accountancy has been one of those jobs where it's like, we'll always need accountants, you know, people always have money. And he was saying, oh, hopefully they'll always have money. He was saying, at the moment, the computers can't do my job, but one day they will be able to, like, they're getting there. But she's a literary associate, so reads plays and picks them and also writes and stuff. And he's saying, there is never going to be a computer that will be able to do your job. And do you think that's, like, less for me, because I'm not so much arts, but for people who are graduating with English Lit or, like, theatre degrees and stuff, there will never be a computer that can do that. Whereas for, like, accountancy, there will be a day, I think, where that becomes, what's the word?
Possible. Plausible?
No, become where those jobs become
moribund.
Moribund? I've never heard that before, but let's go with that.
Yes, moribund. Loads of emails this week.
Really?
Yeah, actually mostly welcoming you back to the world of podcasting.
It has only been like 1 week.
Well, I know, but it's a long time in podcasting world. Dave Thomas wrote, he says, I've been listening to your podcast for 18 months now. The content is tremendous. The contrasting opinions between the generation gap, he said, is a fairly common concept, but your personal take on things, I believe, is easily the best out there. So once more, we're the best generation gap podcast.
I don't think there's that many to choose from.
Well, we want to be at the top. And of course, obviously, we've missed out on the award we were going to get this year.
Oh, yeah.
He's also suggested a couple of songs for us. Take Me by Phil Foldner. Do you know that? No, don't mean anything to me. And The Crunch by the Ra Band, which is from my era, which I do remember. It was on Top of the Pops an awful lot. David Ailes says, Ruth, 19, wild and reckless jigsaw puzzler. He says, what has the youth of today turned into?
Hey, it's not my fault.
He says, my son Stephen is working through this at two hospitals in Oxford. He's got another son, Richard, who's working at a food supplier in London, so they're both still working through it all. Gail, my wife, is locked down in Spain, and me stuck in sunny Basra, so he's obviously in the services in Iraq. All the airports and borders closed there in Iraq, and an expired visa, he says, such fun. I suspect he's being sarcastic.
That sounds stressful.
But he says, it's Friday, our day off here, off on a mission to secure essential supplies of beer and scotch. Andy May says, glad you decided to carry on. Love to the podcast this week. Stay well. Grace Strait gives you lots of support. She says, I love the podcast, but I had to email in about the recent discussion on, quotes, English enlightenment. I'm totally with Ruthie on this one. We should be ashamed of a lot of our history and owe apologies to many Indigenous people whose culture and heritage we robbed. Well said, Ruthie. She says, I love hearing a debate, though. It's healthy. Hugh Besant, who's one of our regular emailers, said, belated welcome back. I don't think it actually matters whether you're at uni or not, Ruth. As a listener from almost the start, I think I started on episode 5, season 1. You know, our spurious seasons that we've had for this. And caught up with the first 4. He says, the enjoyment is in the relationship. So there you go. It's all for the podcast.
Yeah, we don't speak outside of the...
David Tucker.
Makes dinner time awkward.
David Tucker says, hi, Martin and Ruth. Great to see you back. Dinner time is awkward, except we can always put on House of Games.
Love House of Games. House of Games, it's such a good quiz show.
It is.
Really is. And I had a conversation about House of Games today.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, so one of my friends sent me a message saying, we're doing a Zoom call tonight, and she sent me a message saying, did we speak about House of Games? Because my mum's got the House of Games book, and I thought we'd do some House of Games quizzes tonight. And so I was talking about that.
Answer Smash, we like it.
Answer Smash, yeah.
We love it.
So good. It's blood. I do sometimes sit and I think, oh my God, what's my life come to? Let's watch House of Games. How excited.
And what a genius Richard Osman is. Do you know how he's got into this? Because you know I know Richard through Fighting Talk. In fact, I got him on Fighting Talk originally because he sent me a tweet saying, or a text or something, saying how much he loves the programme Fighting Talk and could he get on it? And I thought, he just started doing Pointless on BBC Two. But he was a producer at Endemol, the production company, and... when they were piloting Pointless, they didn't have anyone to sit in the other chair and come up with the answers. So they said, Richard, just sit in the chair and see it. And from that, of course, he got Pointless. And now he's the king of everything in the world. And,
king of everything in the world.
He's got the house games.
He's really good. He's very talented. I really like him and Alexander Armstrong on Pointless.
Yeah. No,
that's the youth of today, hot tech.
Yeah, that's for old people. You know, all those quiz shows from the day, Countdown and... The thing, I don't watch it. What's the thing, Ben Shepherd?
Tipping Point.
Yeah,
I don't like Tipping Point as much.
So. Anyway, David Tucker.
It's a bit too the chairs. I don't mind the chairs. Tipping Point's a bit actually funny. Sorry about the chairs. I got a message from a mate the other day, and she just said she just sent it into our group chat, and she was like, right, have any of you watched the new series of The Chairs? And I was like, actually, you know what, I haven't watched. And she's like, it's brilliant. They've got new chairs and something about the chairs going up against each other or something like that. She's like, it's so good. You need to watch the new series of The Chairs. Get up to date. She's like, yeah, I'm watching it on like... She wasn't just watching it as it came on and stuff. She was like purposefully going on her laptop to like have, you know, to catch up on The Chairs, you know?
It is sad. David Tucker sends us an email. Hi, Martin and Ruth. Great to see you back. Would be good to hear a discussion on the contrast between the young and the more senior opinions on how this will change our lives and be remembered in the future. I think we have talked
about
that.
You said a weird thing, because I was saying that like I don't think the world will ever look the same as it did before. For better or worse, I think in both ways. And you were saying, oh, it'll just be a quarter of a page in a history book? Like, you don't think it is this major historical event?
No, because I think there will be probably more pandemics of some description, not maybe like this one.
I think this is a massive historical event, not a half a page of a history book at all.
Well, we have to disagree on that. I think it's a thing that in... You know, history is a huge thing, you know. In the 1950s, nobody ever referred back to the 1918-19 Spanish flu epidemic. Nobody ever talked about it.
I think that's because it happened just after the First World War and in between the two wars and before the Great Depression. Mm. Like, I think that's just... how it landed.
Well, there you go. People talked about the Great Depression. I'm just thinking, growing up, what I learned about was the wars and the Great Depression. I never, ever, pandemics were right at the back of...
Yeah, no, I know, but I think that I don't think it will. I think that they have been at the back, and then I think that there was like Bill Gates' TED Talk, which had been watched tons and tons, which was we're not ready for the next pandemic and stuff. And there were like a few other little programmes here and there that were about pandemics. I think that this will affect history so much, and I think that people will refer back to it. I think I'll tell my future children, if I have them, about this.
If you ever get out of the house.
If I ever get out of the house, more
or less agreed, though, that Bill Gates and Richard Osman are the two greatest people in the world right now.
If all men are wiped out and I get to choose who we serve, ideally, in the post-apocalyptic world when all men cease to exist and we form a matriarch, which men would you serve? So Richard Osman, Bill Gates, probably like Leonardo DiCaprio, Timothy Chalamet.
He's a strange choice.
What? He's not a strange choice at all. Harry Styles, I'd serve him.
Jennifer Parkinson writes in. She says, I think of you as friends in a way, and now we can't leave the house to see friends. We like listening to you at least. Good luck with the jigsaws, Ruthie. I heard on another podcast, the coronavirus cast, that there is a Darth Vader jigsaw that doesn't have straight edges.
I did one without straight edges that grandma gave us. Straight edges around the sides, but then in the middle, no straight edges.
Ah, well, this probably has no straight edges around the side at all. It's probably just Darth Vader. It's all black as well, Darth Vader, so that'd be difficult. But I think it's more for Star Wars geeks, really. That's for boys, Jennifer, not for girls.
No, Dad.
Terry, do you know any girls who are into Star Wars?
Maddie, who lives just at the end of our street, is... like Star Wars a lot.
Oh, right. Oh, there you go. Terry Hall has written
to us. In fact, I've just never seen Star Wars. I'm sure I might like them. It's hard to get into, isn't it?
No, I didn't get into it. I saw The Empire Strikes Back.
That's meant to be the best one, isn't it?
Yeah. I wasn't that excited. Terry Hall has written to us, and that's not Terry Hall of the Specials and later the Funboy 3, and it's not Terry Hall who was on children's television in the 50s with Lenny the Lion. This is a different...
I don't know any of the words.
No, of course you don't. I know, but I'm trying to help you along with these things. Terry Hall says, I have a grandson at Cambridge who I can imagine having the same trials and tribulations as Ruthie. They have it tough, and they do. However, he's put on the bottom of his email, it says, sent from my Huawei mobile. do I pronounce that right or wrong? Huawei.
Huawei.
Anyway, it's sent it from his Huawei mobile. Should we be... Are we all right with Huawei?
I didn't even really pay any attention to the whole bug tapping stuff, but, you know... We're not massive fans of China at the moment.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Time for a music special, Ruth, because one thing we're missing out on this weekend is Eurovision, or the proper Eurovision contest. However, all the Eurovision songs are going to be played on the BBC through the night. Graham Norton's going to be commentating on it all.
He always does such a good job on Eurovision.
Yes, he does. That's not as good as Terry Wogan, but...
I don't remember Terry Wogan, to be honest.
I think actually he's as good as Terry Wogan.
But I think the Graham Norton show is excellent. I think it's so good.
Graham Norton is a huge talent, not as talented as Richard Osman, but he is a huge
he's getting
talent.
On the list.
He's a huge talent. When you hear him on Just a Minute, which is an old person's radio show, really, but you hear him on that...
Which I've also listened to.
Which you listen to, obviously. You enjoy it, don't you?
Yeah, really.
Especially
like
when he's on. He is sharper and wittier than virtually any of the other contestants that you ever
He's really good.
That.
He's really
he is
clever.
Brilliant on that. Yeah. However... it's the Eurovision song because the BBC are looking back at the great Eurovision years, so there'll be a bit of Bucks Fizz.
A bit of reminiscing.
I love all that, Bucks Fizz and everything.
What was the Bucks Fizz song?
Making Your Mind Up.
Oh, yeah.
Performed in a slightly sexist way, and the boys ripped off the girls' skirts.
Did they? I've never seen the video.
Oh, you must go and see it. Yeah, you'll be horrified, but go and see it. But Cheryl Baker appears on my show quite a lot. She was one of Bucks Fizz.
Oh.
Whenever we want to talk about Eurovision, we like to get Cheryl Baker on. So what we'll do this week is have our Eurovision specials, and I have to agree with you. The song that you've chosen.
Yeah, so my pick from this week, obviously, as the youth, I picked one of this year's entries. It's called Think About Things by Diafryer or something. I have literally no idea how to say it, but it's D-A-O-I.
Yes.
The I has got like an umlaut on it.
It's not even an umlaut. God knows what it is. It's got something on the top of it.
Yeah, I don't even know what it is.
No.
And then Fryer.
That's his name, but give me the name of the group that they're called. That's what the name they're performing under.
Oh, because I'm sorry, on Spotify it comes up as just...
Yeah, that's his name.
I've got no idea. But it's the Icelandic offering, and it's called Think About Things, and it is... Well, listen to this.
Baby, I can't wait to know. What do you think about things? Believe it, I will always be there, so... Tell me anything and I'll listen.
It is good, Ruth.
It's so good.
It's really good.
Like, I genuinely... There's not many Eurovision songs. Actually, I can not really think of any. Maybe Euphoria, they kind of played that in clubs a bit. I cannot think of a single song... From the last Eurovision ones that I've listened to.
Have
just
you ever heard of a little song called Waterloo?
No. Not of the last 10 years.
Right.
Any of the Eurovision songs that I've listened to just for pleasure, as much as that Think About Things, I think it is
going to win it. There was absolutely no doubt.
It feels really sad.
But you look at the performance and they're dressed as these futuristic.
Oh, it's brilliant.
The performance is fantastic, the way they turn around. It's all.
Are they still going to have a winner? Are we still voting?
I'm not sure about the voting. It'd be difficult to do. Well, it wouldn't be that difficult to do. It's always a phone vote, isn't it? There may be a phone vote. But it's. Let's be honest, it's won it. Because it's choreographed and everything. And it reminds me of
the song's great. Like, they didn't even need to do any. Yeah.
Well, it reminds me of Motown in the 60s and 70s a bit, in that they always choreographed their routines, you know, the Temptations, the Four Tops, and that is brilliant. I mean, I have to agree with you, it's absolutely brilliant. The group is called Deo Og Gagnamagno. That's what I think it's called, but I might be wrong. Well, now, interestingly, you say that there's not, in the last 10 years, there's not been a really great Eurovision song apart from Euphoria.
And what was the one? Oh, I'm trying to think.
This might be the one I'm going to play.
Teardrops, Only Teardrops.
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm about to play that one was good, Emily De Forest, which is the Danish entry that won it in 2013.
Yeah, so I remember that. 13 that was back when I kind of still watched it.
Yeah,
a bit
you were in on a Saturday night and you watched it with us.
The last couple of years, I've not really watched it.
But interesting, I just wondered, I looked at the internet to see if she had much of a career after the winner. Mm. Not really. Second studio.
Not many of them really do, to be honest. Even the girl who did Euphoria didn't really have much of a.
No. ABBA did okay afterwards.
Yeah, ABBA did okay. But in fairness, I can only really think of ABBA who have had massive careers.
Well,
Engelbert. Humperdinck.
Well, he was.
He already had his career.
Cliff Richard, when he went into it, was already famous. Sandy Shaw.
Who I didn't know Cliff Richard did it.
Congratulations. You've heard that song, yeah?
Yeah.
And Sandy Shaw had a bit of a career in the 60s, and she had a winner as well. So some of them did, but I agree. It's very rare that Eurovision. And Emily De Forest, I'm afraid, is sort of. I mean, her first album was called Only Teardrops, obviously, which is a song. And then her second studio album, History, was only released in 2018. So it was 5 years before she came up with the second album, and nothing since then. Mm. So Emily Charlotte Victoria De Forest.
Teardrops.
We only got ourselves to blame. It's such a shame. How many times can we win and lose? How many times can we break the rules? But it's we.
So there she is, Emily Charlotte Victoria De Forest.
Yeah, it's a good
Danish,
song.
Born...
I don't think it's got a patch on.
No, it's not as good as the Icelandic entry, but it's good. Born 28th of February 1993. Mm. Do you want an interesting fact about Emily De Forest?
I probably won't remember it anywhere, but yeah, I guess so.
She claimed she was a great-granddaughter of British King Edward VII.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we know Edward VII sort of put it about a bit.
He's the one who abdicated.
No, Edward VIII abdicated.
Oh, okay.
He had a relationship with Edward VII was immediately after Queen Victoria, I believe.
Right, okay.
But he's known for being.
He was a bit of a playboy.
He was very much a playboy, which is what they used to say in those days. And she claimed that she was his great granddaughter. However, Danmarks Radio, which is a Danish station, obviously, used the story of her claim to royal ancestry in its promotion of the Dansk Melody Grand Prix, which is a competition there to find the Eurovision contestant. The claim, though, has been discredited by researchers.
They're always discredited.
A bit of publicity.
Yeah. There's always someone claiming to be Princess Anastasia, obviously they're all killed, the Romanovskis, but claiming to be the child. And it's always quite fun when that happens.
More backing up of your thing about colonialism. Now,
amazing!
It is amazing. Well, it's just amazing how much stuff we did in last week's Lockdown Sessions podcast that's come up in the interim in other podcasts and in the newspapers we're leading here. But what year would you say, if you thought when the United States was born, the creation of the United States, what year would you give?
Oh, now you're making me feel.
Well, it's
1776.
Yeah, that was the Declaration.
Declaration of Independence. Yeah,
and I always remember the 200th anniversary.
But obviously, Native American populations were there.
Well, now the correct date, according to people on your side of the colonialism argument, is 1619. And there's a thing going in America called the 1619 Project. And the whole point of the project is to reorder the world's understanding of American history among, on sort of woke lines, if you like. 1619 defines America as a nation not built on the lofty ideals of freedom and self-government, but it redefines America as one built on the degradation, dehumanization, and persecution of black people, one whose economy owes its rise to global primacy, not to entrepreneurial endeavor, but to the efficiencies afforded by slavery.
So it was 1619 when
the first slaves arrived in the United States. Somebody argued in the Times, a guy called Gerald Baker, that he doesn't agree with the 1619 Project. He says you can't deny the indubitably dark role race has played throughout American history. But he says, you know, you have to look at it in the whole and the achievements of America generally. But it's interesting is that even though he's very much on the right and, you know, he sees America as a great nation and all that, does at least give, you know, because I'd never heard about the 1619 Project, but it's one that you might want to look up, which says, so it's not talking about the Native Americans so much, but talking about slavery being such a key economic driver, which obviously it's got to be if you've got a free labour, even if you've got cheap labour force, if you've got a free labour force, it is going to help your rise to economic power. Something you'll look up in between looking at nice funny videos of cats.
I'm always looking at videos of cats. Have you ever known me watch a video
of cats? I'm not an animal lover, but some of those things that people do post,
there are some.
I think dog videos are slightly funnier.
I prefer
than cat.
A dog video, yeah.
So do I. Those dogs do.
Dogs have got more personality, you know.
Just finally on this week's lockdown sessions, because we want to leave ourselves something to do next week. At Oxford University, we're talking about the 1619 Project and how sometimes being woke can get you a balanced view of society as opposed to a one-sided view. I think one of the problems is some people will look at the 1619 Project and that will then be, you know, ignore every other aspect of American society. It's like you talk about slavery over here, you also have to look at William Wilberforce and various other sort of liberal voices and British democracy, the way that worked. Oxford University has dismissed a call from students to drop ableist, transphobic, classist and misogynistic content from its reading list. It said it accepted that some students would find certain views unsettling, extreme or offensive. This is the Oxford University Authority said that. But insisted that free speech within the bounds of the law was the lifeblood of the university. It was the university...
I think taking stuff off a reading list really sits badly with me, to be honest. I always think of like Lolita in these sort of things. So like Lolita is obviously, like, you read it and it's borderline paedophilic and misogynistic and sexist and stuff, but it's also an excellent book. And I always think of it, I think it should be on, like, people should read it, do you know what I mean?
Did you read it in translation or did you read the...
Oh yeah, I read the original, yeah, Cosmo read it in translation. I always think it's not only of its time, but it's also, like, it's a book that doesn't, you know, it's flawed massively, but that's, like, part of it. And I always think you should never take stuff off reading lists.
No.
Because then you're left with an Orwellian world, aren't you?
If you want to hear our two Eurovision entries, if you don't have enough Eurovision on Saturday on the BBC when there's absolute the whole night's Eurovision themed, and you want to hear our two entries, the wonderful Icelandic one and the equally good one, I think, from Denmark.
Not equally good, but still good.
Well, from 2013.
Then you can find them on our Spotify playlist. You can find that by typing in Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, Uni Dad and Me or Ruthie Martin podcast, I don't know, something like that on Spotify, and you'll find our playlist with the songs from this week and all the other songs from all the other weeks in full.
Including last week's? Did you put last week's?
Last week's aren't there yet, but there will be. They will be by the time this goes out.
Do you remember what they were?
Mine was Come Through by Jeremy Zucker.
And mine was the song from Tootsie by Stephen
yes.
Bishop.
So
I think
those
it might
songs
be you, I think the song's called.
Will yeah. also be on
you'll
that.
Probably, after we finish this, you'll probably put those
yes,
songs
straight
on,
away, because yeah. it's just kind of galling out. And then...
Because we're in a week, so...
If you... I always forget. And then if you're online and you're struggling with something to do or you're just bored or lonely in lockdown, then send us an email
at
martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com because it'll cheer you up and hopefully... It'll cheer us
it'll
up
cheer
and hopefully...
And it might cheer you up. And also yeah. it fills a bit of space, doesn't
yeah,
it?
You
on
know,
the,
less
on the
work.
Podcast, because you don't have to yeah. look for too much stuff. And if you do want to send us an email, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. So martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. I could do that old person thing and say, that's all one word, Martin, but I think people have more or less got the idea that it's all one
yeah,
word.
Yeah, when people read out www. Dot, yeah. No, that's no spaces. Oh. Right. That's all for this week, and we'll see you soon.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.